It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 410 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week I speak with Michael Dolce from the Secrets of the Sire podcast and also from several comics. And one of them is in the middle of a Kickstarter as we speak. It's for Descendant. If you go to Kickstarter and look for Descendant Volume 1 Trade Paperback, you'll see the Kickstarter campaign there. It's described as Dark Phoenix meets 24 and it's the first volume. As I'm recording this, the pledge has already been met, so there are likely going to be stretch goals coming very soon. It all concludes on Friday, December 6th at 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time. We also talk a little bit about the podcast as well as the other comics he's made, including the aforementioned Secrets of the Sire, as well as other good projects. We talk about how these come to be, as well as what we can expect from Michael and his group in the future. So I'm sure you'll enjoy what he has to say. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. It's really great to be talking with Michael Dolce, the creator of such books as The Sire, The Mainstream, has a book that we did for Image called Descendant, and that's what the Kickstarter's coming is about, isn't it, Michael?
Yeah. My collaborators, Marcus Perry and Mariano Navarro, with Brant Fowler on the letters, we did this book 10 years ago through Shadowlines, which is the... Shadowline was a branch of Image Comics, just like Top Cow is, just like, you know, all these different companies. It's Jim Valentino's branch. We released it about 10 years ago. It was really awesome. It was an amazing experience. I got to debut it at San Diego Comic-Con. I got to actually fulfill a lifelong dream of signing next to all of the Image guys, which was pretty cool because... when I was 10 years old, my dad, bless him, he's still around, but bless him for waiting outside with me 3 hours in the freezing cold to get signatures by all these Image guys. Mm. And fast forward, 20 years later or so, I was out there signing with them, and it was pretty awesome, and it was a great book. It was a 3-issue miniseries. It was about a counter-terrorist agent who is secretly the descendant of an Incan goddess. She's got these powers she can't control, and she's kept hidden her whole life until someone from her past kind of emerges and outs her, and she has to go on the run from her own team.
Hmm. Wow, Descendant, that's what it's called. Now, my understanding is that this, you had, well, it's not Descendant, but The Sire. Well, let's jump into that for a second. Well, first of all, we'll wrap up the Descendant stuff as much as we can. You have a Kickstarter that's coming soon, and we should look for Descendant on Kickstarter is what we should do.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I created a link. Sire Studios, Inc. is my website, so you can actually go to sirestudiosinc.com/Kickstarter, and it'll take you right to my latest project. Or you can look up my name on Kickstarter. I think my profile is M. Dolce. And so you can look up Dolce, D-O-L-C-E, and you should find it. You should find, all the Kickstarters I've done, all the Kickstarters I've backed. I mean, I love, I think this past year I actually tweeted out that I bought more Kickstarter books than I think mainstream books, not the mainstream, which I wrote and put out through Zenoscope, but the actual, Marvel, DC stuff. So it's great. It's a great place to discover new stuff.
Well, Kickstarter, and I always tell the story when I talk to folks from Kickstarter, is that Kickstarter, it was an article that said that it's the second biggest producer of comics after Marvel. Marvel's first, and this is the second. And I believe it because I see a lot of Kickstarters for comics and good things like that. So I'm really thinking that the Kickstarters and Indiegogo and things like that are places to go. I always worry, what did we miss? Because we didn't have Kickstarter before it came along.
Yeah, Yeah, Dirk Manning, I don't know if you ever had a chance to interview him, but he's an indie creator, and he's like a six-figure Kickstarter guy. Like, he makes it his business. But he explains it really well. He talks about Kickstarter being like an Amazon pre-order. It's essentially what you put. You're getting access to things you can't get, normally. My first Kickstarter I did was back in 2014. It's a book called The Undone, which... It's not the Amazon series, unfortunately. I keep getting asked, oh, is that you? I remember, all these people who bought The Undone are like, oh, there's a time travel show on Amazon. It's Undone. It's got to be you. I said, no, it's not. I should sue them, but I won't. I remember back in 20, I was so hesitant to do a Kickstarter because I said, it's not that I wouldn't like the money to put these books together, but I don't want to ask my friends and family for money. Like, it just felt like weird, right? I mean, this is back when, like 2013 or so, when Kickstarter first, started kind of popping up, and the whole idea of crowdfunding, you're like, what? You're like, we're raising money? Like, we're asking friends and family to make your books? Like, it just didn't make sense to me. But then once I understood that it was a place, it's almost a new distribution platform, then I was like, okay, I get it. I totally get it. It's the future business model of Sire Studios. We're going to be launching these projects through Kickstarter to get them funded, get people on board, get people to become fans, and then worry about distribution after.
That's interesting, because I was talking to a guy who runs a company down in Florida, and he was talking about the fact that they had never done Kickstarter before. Now they're doing one, and they're waiting to see how it works, because they want to. It may influence the company moving forward.
I absolutely could see that. I mean, the cost to put it together a comic book, it's funny. I run my own marketing business. I have a podcast. I have a whole bunch of different ways that I earn a living, and comics is just one of them. But comics to me is always the one that I sit there and go, I can't wrap my head around, how do you make money doing this? Because The Sire came out in 2006, and I self-published that. It was through Aftershock Comics. It was great. But Dan Leister, the artist, and I did the colors and the writing and the lettering and did pretty much everything except he did the artwork. He and I were working, he was working for free. I would get him tables at shows, and he would come and make money selling books. And, that's how I ended up repaying him. I ended up definitely paying him, when all was said and done, because of all the money we made selling books at different conventions and things like that. So it was worth it in that sense. But, I could never wrap my head around, how do I make money making comics? Like, it just doesn't, the only other way I could see it is if you get a book optioned, right? I mean, that's the only other way that you're going to get any kind of money on this. So Kickstarter becomes this way of not losing money, and you don't necessarily make money off a Kickstarter. Anybody who does a Kickstarter is going to tell you that. But The Undone, when all was said and done, I didn't lose money. It was a $2,500 Kickstarter. I made $3,200. Pretty much all that went to the artist, Sue Sherpa, the colorist, Todd Rayner. And anything left over went to printing, the book up for me. And, so I didn't lose any money, and I got to make this book, and that to me is a win. And then you go out and actually sell the book in conventions and go, okay, so I probably made a few bucks off that book. And then I'm going to be seeking, greater distribution for that, next year. I'm renaming it The Time Trader, and we're going to do a Kickstarter to finish off the graphic novel next year. And, that's how we're going to make the money. Once you can wrap your head around being an artist and being a businessman, thinking like a business person, I should say not man, business person, that's when you can actually make this your real job, not your side hustle, not your passion project. I hate that term, passion. It's your passion. My passion is also I like not having bosses. I like being my own guy, that's my passion. passion. You know, I like mm-hmm. I like doing whatever I, you know, inspires me. So,
mm-hmm. Boy, it's so much I want to touch on. Right. Well, why don't we get to what we were aiming at, and that was the Sire. Mm-hmm. The Sire, you said you started in 2006. I got the first two trades and read them. It was really interesting, and as I was telling you before we started to record, that I'm always confronted by people who tell me that the superhero business is done. It's all been done. Can't be any way to go and do something original, but yet the Sire is very original. The concept is something I've never seen before, and it's really just a great book.
Thank you. Well, thank you so much. Yeah, the Sire is about a superhero forced by his own costume to fight evil. It's kind of like having a spider sense, but instead of warning him of danger, actually puts him in danger. some people say, oh, it's kind of like Venom. I like to phrase it's the greatest American hero meets Venom. And that's the best way I can kind of truncate it so people can kind of get into it. But really, it just comes down to the question that I always had was, if you had these cool superpowers, are you putting a costume on and going on patrol? I mean, there's things you can do to help people that you don't need to be like, you know, in an alleyway, like, you know, busting people, you know, busting like pickpockets and things like that. I couldn't wrap my head around that. So in this universe, you know, everybody is forced by their own powers. So the costume itself is more than just a costume. It's tied to this alien energy force that has basically kind of invaded the planet, and it's forcing people to act in a way that mirrors a superhero universe. But it's never just that simple.
Interesting. Now, of course, the big news is, as you were telling me before too, is that the Sire appeared on CBS.
Yeah,
talk about that.
It was really cool. It was an unexpected little surprise. It appeared on the CBS show Evil. It appeared in episode 4. It is a blink and you'll miss it cameo, but it was there. And I have my freeze frames and my screenshots to prove it, which was awesome. I got contacted by a company that places things on sets of TV shows. So I said, this character loves graphic novels and comics. Would you please send some stuff over? I said, oh, absolutely. That sounds great. And they ended up using this amazing pinup by Andrew Mangum. And Gene Jimenez did the coloring. And it was for the Sire trade paperback volume 2. So Mike Coulter, Mr. Luke Cage himself, is standing next to this awesome poster. And it's a thrill. I mean, it's an absolute thrill, and it was great publicity, and it was great to kind of keep expanding it. The Sire's through 2 volumes right now, which again, thank you for the compliments earlier talking about how you read the trade and you really enjoyed them, and it'll launch us into season 2. Just good publicity to have to launch us into season 2, number 1, which will be coming out in 2020.
Now, as I understand it, you did a variant cover based on that show.
Yeah, we did, and we just did an Indiegogo. I learned a lot about Indiegogo. I wanted to dive into Indiegogo because it's this kind of like alternate Kickstarter platform, but it's not all or none, which was kind of cool to do. So I took that image, and it was really – I had to put it together very fast because I got a week's notice from the company. By the way, this is going to show – this is going to be on the episode. So I said, well, you know, how do I kind of bring attention to this? And I thought, you know, it's kind of neat. Indiegogo campaign would be great. Use that as a variant cover to the trade. And currently, the Indiegogo campaign was very quick. I just wanted to do something very fast to tie around the release of the episode. And now you can get it on the website, SireStudiosInc.com. You can actually order the book, the variant addition to the trade paperback on the website.
So as far as the Sire goes, you've got 2 that I've read so far. Is there more Sire in the future coming?
Yeah. Just mentioned I'm going to be doing 2020. The adventure for me is I actually went to art school, and my dream was always to write and draw my own comics. A good friend of mine, Darren Sanchez, who works over at Marvel, we worked together at Wizard Magazine when there was a Wizard Magazine, and I had originally done the book as this book called Crossfire, and that was my senior year of college was spent in the computer lab or in the bar. Those are the 2 places I was. More the computer lab than the bar, even, amazingly. And I wrote the first issue. I drew the first issue. I created my own font. based off my handwriting. I learned, coloring comics. I learned the graphic design element. I did everything. And then I submitted it to Diamond, and they said, no, the art's not good enough.
And so
it never got in. And then I took to conventions. I said, well, I'm going to do this grassroots. And I did that for about a year, and it was great. But then I ended up working at Wizard Magazine. I met Darren, and Darren took a look at all the stuff I was doing. He was like, this is really great. He says, but, at the end of the day, are you trying to make a comic book or an art project? You know, what are you trying to accomplish here? Because I ended up spending the next year, like, redrawing the book and being like, well, I'm going to get in. And I would show this around the office, and people would be like, oh, your art got better. You know, they didn't say it was good. They said it got better. And, I everyone was very, very nice, and I kind of had to decipher that. And so I did, and I said to Darren, I said, no, I want to tell a story. That's what I want to do. He says, so go find an artist that'll take this off your plate. You don't need to do everything. You know, not everyone's John Byrne. Not everyone, is Frank Miller and can do this. And I said, you know what? It's the best advice I ever got. That's why I ended up hooking up with Dan Leister. We've become like really, great friends over the past 15 years or so now, and it's been, really just extraordinary ride. That being said, I have kind of worked on my style the last 20 years, and technology has helped as well, too, in terms of I'm a very good reference artist. Back then getting reference was, an odyssey. But now, thanks to Google, the reference is readily available. And so I'd like to endeavor to draw the next issue. I do have some artwork in Volume 2 Trade. It was issue 9. And, I'm continually trying to attack that last mountain of being the writer artist. So we'll see. We'll see how that goes. If not, I actually have an artist in standby waiting to jump on if I can't seem to accomplish this.
I got to say, though, that must have been an experience when people, didn't support you along that line. Because, it's a personal thing. You put the stories together. You put the artwork together. And after you work really hard on it, you show it to somebody and they don't necessarily buy it.
Yeah.
Was that tough to take? I mean, when you did make that transition, was that kind of difficult?
Here's the thing, though, and this is going to sound very anti-millennial. No one's entitled to have to respond to what you do. I mean, the only thing you can do is control what you can control, right? I mean, it's all you can ever do in life. And so, yes, it sucks. I love having an Image comic in my resume, right? But I still get rejected all the time. I mean, I have pitches that get sent out for new books, and oh, sorry, it's not for us. And you sit there and you wonder, like, well, am I any good? Am I this or that? So it doesn't ever get easier. But that being said, it just means that it's just not what someone's looking for. And put yourself in the role of a publisher. And again, put yourself in the role of a businessman, and say, can I make money off this idea? I look back at that book that I did, and it was the greatest mistake I ever made, because it taught me so much. So there's tons of positives that come out of it as well.
It's funny, because I was talking with another creator, and he had this story that he was trying to sell, and I kept telling him, make a comic of it. If you can make a comic book and then bring it back, well, of course, he went, and even though he wasn't into comics or familiar with them, he went ahead and got going onto it. And of course, now he's got the comic, and I said, are you going to go back? You've got the comic. Go back and show it to them.
Yeah.
But he didn't give me a complete answer on that one, but it's an interesting thing.
You know what the funny thing I've learned, though, too, and this is, I mean, it's funny because these things seem obvious, but they're not, and to a lot of people who are trying to do this stuff, don't fall in love with one idea. I really genuinely believed in college that the Sire was going to support me for my entire life. And anything else I got to do would just be kind of like an extra bonus. And the Sire did a lot of really great things for me. It got me into the comic book industry. It's the first professional thing I ever did. I'll never forget when I was at a I was at Wizard World Chicago in 2006, and this guy came up to me with a book, and he said, you know, it had no autograph on it. And I said to him, I said, oh, I didn't sign this for you when I sold it to you. Because up to that point, you know, going back to Crossfire days, all I had done was go to conventions to sell. But no, this guy said, no, I bought this in the comic book store because I heard about it. You're on my list of people I want to get an autograph from. And that blows me, you know, blew me away. So, you know, it's done a lot of great things. But that being said, the secret to being successful and this not being a side project or a side gig is you have to have lots of ideas. You have to keep producing new work. You just have to keep going and going. And it's the consistent people that, you know, it's almost like sports is my great analogy. You know, there's tons of LeBron, there's not many LeBron Jameses in the world,
right.
But there's a lot of Tim Leglers, and there's a lot of Kurt Thomases, and there's a lot of like these guys that are role players on a team, but you know what? They'll be in the league for 15 years. You know, they'll be professionals at it. And I think most people are going to fall in that realm. As much as I aim to be Brian Michael Bendis, I'd prefer to just be continually writing.
Busy.
Being paid to do it, you know?
Yeah, being busy, that would be is always a good thing
yep.
to accomplish. Well, you know, the stuff that I've read of yours is very creative, I have to say. I love the characters. They automatically breathe for me. I have not read Descendant, but I'm going to be supporting it then when the Kickstarter hits.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Because all the stuff looks really interesting to me. As I go to your site and I look under the list of comics, you've mentioned some of them, the mainstream. You did Grimm's Fairy Tales for Xenoscope, I think.
Yeah, I did a two-issue arc for them. This is going back, you know, 6-7 years ago. It was the Ugly Duckling arc. That's a proud moment. You know, you talk about, you know, it must have been disappointing to have to like have people not support your stuff. Well, on the flip side, that was the first time I'd ever gotten paid to write someone else's comic. That was awesome. And that wouldn't have happened again. That wouldn't have happened had I not suffered the setbacks, you know. I mean, all these things, you know, lead to something better, and that's, you know, that's why I kind of said before, it's not necessarily an opinion that a lot of people have today. A lot of people kind of put their stuff out there and expect people to just, you know, well, why aren't you supporting my stuff? Well, you know, go look at Eric Larson's Twitter feed, because he's brutal, but he's honest and he's true. I mean, you know, some stuff, it's not very good. Like, it's not, you know, and some of that's subjective. I definitely understand that, but realistically, you can look at your stuff and say, is this something? Everything I do, everything I hope to do has to be professional. I mean, it has to. And there's an idea I have in my head of what professional looks like, what professional sounds like, what it comes across as, what it feels like. And if I don't hit that mark, then. If someone doesn't respond to it, I have no one to blame but myself.
Mm-hmm. So it's so interesting because I know several people who think that they should be the next John Byrne.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm going to be the next John Byrne. All I got to do is get it out there and everybody will come rushing. There'll be lines like for Jim Lee and there'll be all these things will be everywhere and I'll be the next big thing. But, you know, there was only one Jim Lee.
Yeah. There's
really only one John Byrne. And the truth of the matter is, you know, before the popular concept of comics and stuff came along with conventions and all this kind of stuff, a lot of people did this stuff without anybody knowing who they were or what they did. And so, you know, they just happened to love to draw, and that was the thing they wanted to do or write or whatever it was. So, I think you're doing the right thing by being consistently busy and looking at new things and trying to get your ideas out there. I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, but you know, it's just what I've learned from watching other people. I mean, there was definitely, I mean, my story, and I've told this to different on different interviews and even on my own show and things like that. And there was a period of time. I mean, I was lost. I mean, it was really bad. I mean, it was Image happened in 2009.
Mm-hmm.
In 2010, I mean, my editor was like, when's the next, you know, when's your next stuff? Please send me some more stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, that was right around the recession. So I had no money. And I was like, and artists, you know, it was funny when I started, you could work with an artist and they would do it pro bono. You know, they would own 50% of the property or whatever the case is, or, you know, and they'd work with you for free because they all had jobs and, you know, whatever. You know, if they were trying to break in, this and that. But then right around the recession time, I remember one of my artists, Jose Holder, he's like, I need $75 a page. And I'm like, well, I can't afford that. You know, at the time, I was like, I can't afford that. He's like, well, I can't. He's like, I had an advertising job. I don't have an advertising job. I need to make money. And so I was, you know, in 2009, I bought a house. And so I was like, I need to get my funds back together. And by the time I was ready to do it, my editor got let go. And all of a sudden, you know, Jim Valentino was squeezing up, rather than putting out 6, 7, 8 books a month, he's like, I'm going to do 1 or 2 at most. Mm-hmm. And so suddenly, you know, I had image and suddenly I didn't have image. And then, you know, I was looking for more work and I was looking, you know, the next couple of years. And by 2012, I remember hitting rock bottom. I was talking to my girlfriend, who's my wife now. And I just, you know, I don't know what went wrong here. You know, all of a sudden I'm nowhere. And so, you know, it was one of those things where I sat there going, well, what do I do? And at the time, self-publishing, the idea of self-publishing, was a step backwards. It was like, I've crossed this threshold. I've made it somewhere. I shouldn't have to go and retrace my steps. But then I look out at people who, you know, and again, it's not a knock. This is actually praising them. You know, people like Justin Gray. He's been published by DC. He is a regular Kickstarter guy. Pat Shan, good friend of mine, was writing at Zenoscope. He wrote tons of their books. He wrote what basically I think became the option deal for the Van Helsing TV series at Sci-Fi. Wow. You know, he is a regular Kickstarter guy that just puts books out, and he's just consistent. And it's these people that I look at and go, okay, that's – I see what they're doing. I see where my problem was. I was looking at the platform, or I was looking at the, I guess platform for lack of a better term, and kind of like holding my nose to it or snubbing my nose to it and saying, well, it's the idea of, no, this guy's a creator, because without the work out there, you can't get found. You can't have, if people aren't reading your stuff, if you don't have stuff out there, it doesn't matter how it gets out there, they are not going to want to hire you. And that even goes back to the Zenoscope book. With Grimm's Fairy Tale, they hired me because they read The Sire and said, "Hey, this is pretty good. We're taking pitches. Pitch us one of our stories." And and then, you know, it doesn't happen if you don't make things happen. So,
I hope people are listening, because honestly, there are so many people who think that the golden road is right in front of them. All they got to do is put one step on it, and suddenly the throngs will come. And the truth of the matter is that your experience is not that unusual. In comics, people, you know, I talk to a lot of people on the podcast and stuff like that, and I one of the folks I always think about is Ron Randall with his Trekker books. You know, sometimes it's been published under a publisher, sometimes he self-published it.
Yeah,
but he believes in the book so much that he wants to keep it going, and that's what he does. He does Kickstarters now to kind of keep things moving with that.
Yeah,
so I'm real. I indie comics to me are some of the most creative books out there.
Yeah, well, there's no filter, you know. There's no gatekeeper in that sense.
And you don't have to put Batman back where he was last issue, which is what I always say. If you're a Batman writer, you got to write a story. When you get done, somebody else is going to pick up the character and go on and do something else.
Exactly.
You have to make sure that when he ends up, he's back where he was when he started.
Yep.
See, indie comics, you don't have to do that. If you want to kill your main character and go off in a different direction, you can.
Yep.
As long as it's a good story, people are going to like it. So, you know, your stuff. See, this is where I the Kickstarter thing to me is so important, and I regret that it hasn't been around longer, because there are all these wonderful stories that we probably never got to read because we didn't have Kickstarter and stuff.
Yeah, so. And you know what? Look. Everything I backed in my entire life hasn't necessarily been what I expected it would be. Sometimes you're disappointed, and sometimes you're surprised, pleasantly. Mm-hmm. But the fact that it's out there, you know, I think we were talking, you know, offline, and you were saying, you know, you interviewed Todd Black, which is great. Todd's a guy I met in Chicago. I do panels at conventions, and I talk about kind of all the stuff I just talked about, you know, how to break in and social media and you know, using Kickstarter and all this other stuff. And he's a guy that's taken that stuff to heart. I mean, he was a guy that did that before he even had, you know, listened to me talk at the panel. But just to see him consistently putting stuff out, it's like, all right, you know what? Not everything is going to be up in my wheelhouse of things I'm going to enjoy, but it's out there, and it's just consistent, and it's going to continue to snowball as long as you keep at it and be, you know, as consistent as possible.
Yeah, well, I like his stuff too, Todd Black, I think.
Yeah,
and he's got great concepts and ideas going on too, just like you do. So, I want all you guys to get the chance to get out there and tell your stories so we can get to experience them and get to understand them. I'm an editor in an indie comic myself.
Very cool.
And I don't know if I mentioned to you, I saw you at New York, and I was there helping Richard Rivera. He does a book called Stabbity Bunny.
Okay.
And I help with that. And I'm always looking at it. I'm trying to make sure the commas are in the right place. And I always tell the story. There's a big difference between let's eat comma grandpa and let's eat grandpa. So I always do that. I'm always trying to do those things. And sometimes, honestly, those are roadblocks in comics to me. Because all of a sudden I'm reading a sentence and going, what do they mean by that? Did they need a comma there, or what happened? But see, I can't complain too loudly, because then everybody wants me to go and edit their comics, so I got to be careful too much. But the truth of it is, see, the things like you do, the concept is so wonderful. You need people to do the nuts and bolts sometimes.
Yeah. That's no, I, look, I think working as a team, you know, it's the funny part too, that, you know, when Darren Sanchez, who I'd mentioned earlier, kind of talked to me about, you know, collaboration, work with other people, get, you know, it really helps. You know, having an editor helps, you know, all these things. And you know, again, when I was in college, and you have no money when you're in college, and, you know, you kind of come out and you sit there and say, well, you know, that's why I wanted to draw the book, because, well, I could make the most money by just doing it all myself. But but I've learned over time that time really is money. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you are spread out across a bunch of different things, then you're not going to be as successful as if you're focused on one or two of the aspects of this process.
Well, I can't wait for the Kickstarter to start for Descendant, and maybe I better spell it. Some folks don't know how to spell these things. D as in dog, E S C E N, D as in dog, A N T as in trap. And some people put E's on the ends all the way through and don't put an A, and they wonder why they can't find it. So I always like to spell it just to make sure people get in there.
No, and I appreciate it. Yeah, I appreciate that.
So look for that on Kickstarter, and it should be coming. If it isn't already, it's on the way. So be sure to get there, and with all the specifics and stuff, we'll find out at that point, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you know, really for me, it's getting it into a trade paperback form. I kind of had mentioned when we were talking, you know, Image would, you know, back in the day, wouldn't publish a trade for three issues. And so most of those issues are out of circulation now. I mean, I've kind of actually scrounged up a whole bunch just for my own personal collection to have some. But people want to read it, and I keep saying, boy, I really need to do something with it. And I thought, you know, with the way Kickstarters work now and the way print on demand works now, it's like we can make this book so that people can actually read it. And going through, you know, funny story, putting this Kickstarter together, I reached out to the letterer, and his computer got hacked or broken or whatever. And he's like, I don't have the files anymore. I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. And I actually went in and scanned every single page and cleaned and took in Photoshop. I actually took all the scanned artwork and cleaned it up and tightened it so that it looks as if it's as crisp and clear as it can be. Mm-hmm. And in doing so, got to kind of reread my own story. And I was like, this is really good. Mm-hmm. like Marcus and I, we made a book that's fun. And and we're turning it into a screenplay as well, too. And, cool. You know, we're gonna really, you know, attack it pretty hard in 2020.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Very good. I know a lot of people are longing to have their stuff be on the screen. And this is Descendant just feels like a CW.
Oh, yeah.
A sci-fi type show.
Oh, yeah.
To me, it just screams that out to me. And Sire does too. Sire could easily be part of what I call the DCCW. Right? Because they keep saying, we're not going to do any more superheroes. And suddenly they're going to do Batwoman. Suddenly they're going to do all these ones that they said they're never going to do, they do.
Yeah, it's their most popular TV shows right now. Yeah, you gotta feed the beast.
That's right. Well, you know, there's a way to make money. The only bad thing about the CW is they have a transitional audience.
Yeah.
You know, if they're younger people and they tend to watch it for a year and then they don't see it for a couple of months, they've moved on to something else usually.
Yeah.
So you have to be real careful with that. And with them, the CW, I like CW, but you know, as long as they're going to do the superheroes, I'll be happy. I think one day all of a sudden we'll turn on the CW and we'll go, oh no. What happened? So it's going to be good stuff, but I could see this very easily on Sci-Fi.
You know what's it's great though is you know, back in the day we got 6 issues in a trade in Diamond. After that they kind of we plateaued in sales, so at the time they were like, all right, well, you know, we're good with Asire right now, and I ended it at a point that I was happy with. Mm-hmm. But I would still go to shows and I'd sell the books, and people were like, I really like this concept. Mm-hmm. And they kind of got me to say, well, you know what? I don't have to stop. And Kickstarter now becomes a distribution method, and I can just relax. And there's no pressure when I do these books. The Sire is the first thing I ever did. I created the character when I was in sixth grade, and I can just have fun with them. And, mm-hmm. and but your reaction, and this is, you know, I'm very proud of this. Everyone who buys it tends to have this reaction. They kind of, they're like, we really like this idea. I like the book. When's the next one coming? And mm-hmm. you know, that's the stuff that keeps you going.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It's all of it's good stuff. I'm going to go and sample these other ones when I get a chance here very soon, so I can look at these other books.
No, thank you.
Mainstream and Undone and all that stuff sounds really good. And Descendant, I may hold off until I get my graphic novel of this.
Oh, yes.
The collected edition, but it's good stuff. So, it's Descendant. It's going to be on Kickstarter. It's one more thing I want to talk with you about. And that's your podcast.
Sure.
You go places that I fear to tread. You know, you have video involved in it. And you can have three people, you know, at the same time talking and stuff like that. I do an audio podcast largely because I don't have the technology available to me to be able to do those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. So I can only look longingly at the stuff that you do. And it's really kind of fun. You have people that come on and you do things. And it's like, you do, well, why don't we give a little promo for it? It's the Secrets of the Sire, right? And it's a podcast. Yep. And it comes live on Wednesday nights?
Yeah, we stream live on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitch, and Twitter. We talk comics, movies, TV, and pop culture. And our greatest accomplishment recently was we got Kevin Bacon to do some video as well, too. So he was a guest of the show a few episodes ago with his brother Michael Bacon. But we got him on the video, which was great. So from his home, he's, we use Zoom to kind of bring it all together. I touched upon it earlier in the interview about I was very lost in 2012. Mm-hmm. I was very like, I don't know where to go. I don't know how to do anything. I tried blogging back then. I tried everything, you know, rather than just self-publishing. I tried everything to get back into comics except actually make comics. Mm-hmm. But one of the ideas that I had, and this was going back in 2015, was, you know, I got asked to join a radio station and host my own show, and we did that through talkradio.nyc, and I thought, this is how I'm going to get myself back into comics, and that's where it kind of came from. And wow. And it became this, you know, we put on a show, and it was great, and then Facebook Live was starting, and we really started capitalizing. And it was back when, you know, you just put your phone on a stand and record you and stream you as you're just talking. You know, you're just sitting there talking into a camera. Mm-hmm. And so as it's evolved, it's still definitely a podcast, and it's up on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and Spreaker and Stitcher and all those great places. But it's to me, it's a show. And that's the way I like to look at it. It is a podcast, but it's a show. And I actually really enjoy it. I was in bands all my life, so I was a singer in a band for 10 years. And so performing and being out there and, you know, kind of being like a game show host just comes kind of second nature to me. And it's fun. It's fun corralling three different people or four different people. I have a co-host. His name is Hassan Godwin. He and I worked at Wizard together. He and I were in said band together for about 5 years. All the music is actually ours that's on the show, which is pretty cool. We like I said, we talk comics, movies, TV, and pop culture. But what it did, and I talk about this at panels all the time, is it gives me a platform to connect with the people that I want to do business with, that I want to, you know, reach out to. And you know, again, we've had people from Valiant Comics. We have Aftershock Comics coming on pretty soon. We've had people from Marvel Comics, you know, on. We've had, I mean, just indie, you know, Todd Black, we had him on. We have indie creators. We have, you know, all these different, you know, and we've had celebrities, which is great too. And it just, it adds credibility to the point where I know, you know, some people who I've worked with before, and they're like, oh, I never saw you as this person before. I always knew you as this or this or this. And now I see you as this. And it helped me get right back into it. It led directly to me reconnecting with Zenescope. They ended up publishing the mainstream because of that podcast. So it keeps me putting stuff out there. And now I look at the podcast like I do my comics. Mm-hmm. It's work that I'm putting out consistently.
Mm-hmm. Well, I do that too. I do mine weekly. And there's such a sense of relief when I get the episode done.
Yeah.
I can let go and, okay, I can relax right now for a little while. Mm-hmm. But I always have to live, like you, I'm sure, have to do. We have to live in the future.
Yep.
Okay, what now? Okay, I got that done. Now what do I do? You know, what's next? Who am I going to talk to next?
Yep.
Kind of stuff. It's just a thing to go. But the video part, was that expensive to get the video stuff all put together like
that? No, not at all. In fact, the video stuff is, and I have no problem sharing my technical secrets, it's all through Zoom.
Oh.
Zoom is a video conferencing program. It cost me $15 a month. And that's only to have multiple people and to be able to Zoom however I want to. And then I use open broadcast software. Like I said, I went to art school. I have a graphic design background, so it costs me time. Time does equal money. So yes, it is very expensive when all is said and done. But you know, it's great. I mean, maybe spend about 8 to 10 hours a week on this. We have a new show coming out too. Again, I want Cyrus Studios to be this kind of multi-genre, multi-platform content producer, because you know, the rules have kind of changed, and it's it's not just creative. I love comics and I love storytelling, and that's what I love doing. So it can happen in many different ways. And so we have a show with Victor Dandridge and Mike Fasolo, who's one of the writers in Robot Chicken, and Hassan. I'll be producing that, and it's called Hammer. It's Hassan and Mike Rant. It's a very sports radio. We like to take all our stuff and turn sports radio into pop culture. And we're also working on an audio drama for 2020 based off of a property that Mike Fasolo created from Robot Chicken. So, you know, we're doing a whole bunch of fun stuff. And again, just to get it all done, it's actually cheaper to do a podcast than it is to make a comic.
granted. Yeah. With my podcast, once I get all the technology all set and I pay for Skype and stuff like that, I'm all pretty much, you know, that's pretty much covers all my expenses.
Yeah.
And like people with Kickstarters and stuff like you are, they like to come and get the advertising, the chance for people to find out what they're doing and stuff like that. So I always look forward to that. Boy, you got a lot going on, I have to say. I don't know how you ever get time to talk to people like me with this stuff. That's just amazing. If you want to go, it's SireStudiosInc.com.
Yep.
And check and see some of the stuff that Michael's doing, because there's just all kind of wonderful things going on. Sometime, some way, I'm going to find some way to just you and me talk. And
I'm an open book. I'm an open door. Anytime you want to talk, I'm more than happy to help.
Now, I saw you at New York. Are you going to be doing any other Comic-Cons?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. My wife and I have two young children, so that's even funnier. So I can't hit as many Comic-Cons as I have in the past, but I'm on the schedule to do C2E2 next in February. Then I'll be at MegaCon for the first time. Never did MegaCon before. I'll be roaming the hallways of San Diego Comic-Con. So the other shows I have booths. San Diego, I will be roaming and just kind of doing some networking, and maybe I'll do a signing if I have some, like I did a signing at Zenescope last year, so maybe they'll have me back again to do a signing there. And New York Comic Con is my hometown show, which is a very big help. And I probably, like, I usually squeeze in, you know, I'm at Wizard World Philadelphia usually because it's close by. Keystone maybe, Baltimore maybe, you know, it's you know, up in the air. But those four shows I'll definitely be at.
Okay. And they're listed on your website?
They will be, yeah.
Okay, so it'll be good. So people can follow up, because I got to tell you, I MegaCon is my local con.
Oh, great.
For here. And I have to tell you that if New York hadn't been so great this time, MegaCon would have been our best con this year.
Terrific. See, I've heard such good things. I never did it. Last year I did Motor City for the first time, and it was unbelievable. It blew me away with how great that was. But then I kept hearing MegaCon's great too, so I was like, oh, you know what? Let me – I get to do two away shows or three away shows. I'll try that one, make something new.
Let me make a suggestion to you, and you can take it for whatever it's worth. This is our first year we went to Dragon Con.
Okay.
In Atlanta, and it was an amazing experience. It's, you know, the floor where the comics creators was as big as another convention might be.
Wow.
There were three levels underneath us that were retailers and people selling stuff. Three levels of them. That was only one building. There were like three or four other buildings. There was like a cosplay building. There was all kinds of stuff. There was just, I never got to see half of it because I was busy helping, you know, in the comic.
Sure.
But it was just an amazing, amazing convention. I was astonished because literally that floor could have been an entire convention somewhere else. And it was just one floor of this whole business. It was
Dragon Con is a want. I've been wanting to do that for a long time. Now I know it falls on my anniversary weekend. So
Well, take her there. Take her to Dragon Con. I like that out.
Yeah.
But yeah, we went for the first time, and I have to say, we desperately want to go back because it was really quite an amazing experience.
I want to check it out. I want to check it out. I will check it out at some point.
Yeah, it's really good. Other place I want to go is WonderCon. You know, the San Diego other con that's supposedly mostly comics.
I never did that.
We're going to go next year. We're trying to get into that and try to see how we can do with that. But, you know, as San Diego, we've been there, but we've actually sort of we're trying to step back a little from it. Like you, if we're going to go, we'd probably walk the floor. But the thing of it is if you get a booth and stuff like that, the expense is super high. That's the bad news for that. So,
you know, the West Coast shows, that's the problem with the West Coast shows, though, in general. That's why, you know, if I'm going to pick a show to go on the West Coast, it's going to be San Diego.
Yeah.
You know, maybe look, like I said, Sire Studios, I'm really trying to take it big places in the next 2 years. Mm-hmm. And if we become a viable publisher, which is what the business plan is, you know, then we'll start hitting a lot of these shows, you know.
Oh, gotcha.
It's out there.
Great, great. Well, I'll recommend one more, and then we'll move on here. If you ever get to go to Emerald City Comic Con,
That's another one.
That was a building with six floors on it, and each one of the floors was a different thing. Artist alleys on the top, then you got like the retailers, and then you've got the dealers, talent and stuff like that. And then you go down to the other ones. There's a cosplay one. There's gaming one. Every one like is a different floor. So it's really good, really great convention.
I've heard such good things about that. The only problem with that show is that it's like in a 2 week window of C2E2, and I always hit C2E2 because that is a great coming together of just a lot of friends, a lot of industry, like the comic book industry really gets together, and it's not New York Comic Con where it's so big that you can't, you know, you can't kind of hang out. It kind of reminds me of what Wizard World Chicago used to be years ago.
Yeah.
Where you could go to Knuckles and just have a beer, and Jim Lee's like right next to you, or Jimmy Palmiotti, or, you know, whatever the case is. So
yeah, cool stuff. Yeah, well, it's really good. You're doing great stuff. So, man, and you got plans for the future and all kinds of good stuff, including the Kickstarter, which we've already talked about. Descendant Volume 1 Trade Paperback. Look for it on Kickstarter. If it's not already up there, it will be coming soon.
Yeah, you go to sirestudiosinc.com/Kickstarter. It'll take you right to it.
That would be good. So it'll be good stuff. So I can't wait to read your other stuff. I've read the one. Now I got to get into your other ones, Mainstream Undone. And I'll probably just get Descendant when it comes through the Kickstarter. But great stuff. It's all fun stuff to read, I have to say. It's very unique, very creative. And, you know, I haven't read stuff like this before, which for me, who's been reading for decades, it's a wonderful experience. So
that means a lot to me.
Michael, I hope keep going because I'm so glad I got to see you at New York because that's I saw you at your booth right there, and you made available to me a black and white version of or the beginning of that, which was great stuff, and I really enjoyed that, and so that's why I got the trades that I got because I just can't wait. Now I got to read the other one. See, now I wasn't aware of these other things. So SireStudiosInc.com if you want to catch up on all these good things because it's really great stuff.
Thank you so much.
So, Michael, you're doing wonderful stuff, and much success with the Kickstarter. And I can't wait. I want my copy of Descendant, so we got to get this done.
All right.
So we get it done so that'll happen. So keep it up. And to go to the podcast, where's that?
SecretsOfTheSire.com. SecretsOfTheSire.com.
And they come out on Wednesdays normally.
Every Wednesday. The video is live stream, Facebook.com/SecretsOfTheSire, YouTube.com/SireStudios, or Twitch.tv/SecretsOfTheSire. And then the podcast is up on every major podcasting platform immediately after.
Sometime I'm going to talk with you about video.
Anytime.
I'd love to do that sometime.
Well, I tell you what, I'll be at MegaCon, so I'll be there.
Oh, that's right. You know, I was going to say it would be New York before I see you, but I forgot MegaCon. So,
yeah.
We'll have to talk because there's some things about video that attract me. And audio is a great thing. It's wonderful so people can listen to it when they're doing something else or something like that. But you want to do video every once in a while. And I just sort of – the bug bites occasionally. And that would be – you seem to be the guy that knows what you're doing. That would be great.
Then I got you fooled.
Well, Michael, keep it up, and I look forward. We'll have to talk again when you got something else coming. Maybe another Kickstarter starts coming around or something.
Sounds
we'll have
good.
To talk again because it's good talking with you. And, you know, like I said, much success. And I want this Kickstarter to succeed because I want that trade paperback, darn it. So
perfect.
We'll have to have it. So, well, we'll talk to you soon then.
Thank you.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast, so you can keep reading your comics.
That's it for this week. Be back next time. We'll have another great interview with another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.